man. How are you doing? Like I said,
I'm doing
twice already.
Brilliant, bro.
You look beautiful, man.
Yes.
The lightings really work on you. What's up with that?
Thanks. Bro, I mean, I realized at some point that I was spending most of my time in Zoom.
Huh.
So I was like, might as well create a nice experience around it for the people I'm speaking with.
Right. Yeah. So this is your personal Zoom space.
Yeah.
Hey, that should be a word, right? Zoom space. Like where you zoom out of.
Definitely.
That's such a unique thing. Because, I mean, we're all coming to that place. It's not like you had a novel realization, right? Like, all of us are in a space where we are spending most of our times online behind screens. Interactions are more 3D to 2D than 3D to 3D.
Yeah.
In, like, that weird way. And, I mean, if this is how you stream, bro, you're doing it right.
It is true. Because I feel like a lot of people, when they think of Prakhar, they think of your background. They think of Prakhar in that space.
Huh, right. I met this guy, dude, who's like, yo, you're tall. I was like, I know. He's like, but you feel like you're shorter on screen. I'm like, I need to change my camera angles or something.
Mm.
But yes, it is true. Like, there is a very context-dependent thought. And dude, here's what, something very interesting I learned, right? And I learned this from Taleb. And this lesson is extremely, like, personal. There is nothing profound about it. But here is how it is personal to me. I learned, never refuse to pick up heavy luggage. Never give it to a porter. No point. Because if you're going to go to the gym an hour later and then pretend like you're swinging kettlebells, you're an idiot. Because when you had to really pick up heavy stuff, you gave somebody money to do it. Then when you did not have to pick up heavy stuff, you paid somebody money to pick up heavy stuff. It's like the worst economical transaction you can make. And this generally illustrated a point to me as to how domain dependent our thinking is. The confines in which we are thinking, right? So Prakhar probably is a domain dependent entity behind this background. Right? And we're dumb like that.
Yeah. So Prakhar, dude, I mean, I'm so happy to be here. Also, I'm really happy that this episode is number 99.
Hmm.
A very special number for me.
You have a thing with numbers. What's up with 1111?
I mean, folks in the chat can probably tell you, but 1111 gang in the chat.
1111 gang.
I want to see it.
Bro, is that what you're naming your gang now? 1111? It's a mouthful.
But it is a mouthful. It is. And we will get into it maybe. But the last time I was here was 57, right?
Really?
57. And I feel proud of that because it's sort of like your original, like I wish I could have actually been in the top 10, the first 10.
Huh.
But like for me to have 57 and 99, it's a big deal.
For sure, man. One day when I have millions of views, people will be like, who did Prakhar originally talk to? And then they'll go back to you. And then you will have your shot at fame and recognition. And we're both proud of that.
For sure, bro. I mean, a lot of people DM'd me saying, bro, you should have been on 111. And I was like, okay.
We'll do 111 for sure. Saying. That's booked.
We do need to do it.
Oh, okay, chat, remind us. Like, as soon as I'm 1110, I'll be like, 111 is Abhinav. But so tell me, Abhinav, what is this unique 111 thing? Like, what is magical? You cannot talk about it?
I can't talk about it in direct terms, but I can talk about it in the sense that it's a rare number to me.
Hmm.
In the sense that for me to be 99, for example, even I'm not trying to fit some kind of meaning saying that it's God's number or it's this and that. I'm just saying the meaning is created because we're here.
Hmm.
Right? Because there is only going to be one episode number 99 on BG Radio.
Hmm.
Right? It's a rare thing.
Hmm.
Right? So the fact that we're talking about NFTs today, that's a crazy coincidence. That's a crazy synchronicity, if you want to call it that.
Hmm.
Because we're talking about the idea of NFTs, which is digital scarcity. Which is rare items in the digital space. And this is just one of those examples.
Bro, you know, when I hear something like that, and I mean, let's jump in the deep end because how long am I going to hold myself? When I hear something like that, the fact that digital scarcity, a concept that might prop up another layer of economic activity, right? That's what it's going to successfully do. That's why people are excited. Let's be real. There's new economic activity that we can see with this contract that we figured out, this weird kind of a thappa stamp ki ye unique hai aur ye mera hai. My concern is that the whole point of the internet was that it was free. That we were glad that it was free. That we could get infinite amounts of infinite things for free. Right? Is this not going back to the same scarce resource model that we live in the real world? Why would we create a digital world, garden it, bring it up to life so that everybody can laugh and cheer, and then bloody go back to scarcity?
it's definitely an interesting moment in technology as well, if you think about it, right? What you said is bang on, because even with technology, the idea has been that you want to reduce the cost as much as possible. The way you do that is by creating more of it, and then it gets out to all the people. And now we're sort of seeing a flip. And we don't fully know what that means, right? So for everybody who's like, you know, what the hell are we talking about? This is too abstract. We're talking about NFTs. We're talking about NFTs, which is literally the topic of this week, right? Every single media house talking about that. But I think the way I'm sort of seeing it is, where did that abundance take us? What did it give us? Right? So me, for example, with 10K designers, one of my core things that I keep speaking about is that in education, look what abundance did, which is the reason universities were a big thing was because they had centralized information. You would go there because that information wasn't available anywhere else. So then when Coursera came out, they said, we're going to do that and we're going to bring this to you. And then after Coursera, you had Udemy, which said, now we're going to also do this, but now it's not just professors. Anybody can do it. And then we had self-hosted platforms. Today, we're heading towards like a cohort-based kind of thing. But where did abundance lead us? Today, if you want to learn a skill, you can go online. There's hundreds of videos, thousands of videos. And rather than liberating you, it imprisons you. Because we are not, as humans, programmed to deal with information abundance, overabundance. So rather than surfing, we're now drowning.
Let me try and slightly edit that, because I think I'll make a good point. It's not that we are not used to information abundance. It's that we are not used to information without sustaining or, you know, complementary architecture. Like context. Right? Like, you know, one of the most novel things I picked up from you was that you also, with information, you need community. Yes. Because then when community comes together, there is context, and then people fight for that context, they engage with that context, and then information flourishes, right? So it's probably that. It's probably just raw, naked information does no better to the mind.
True.
Possibly. True. Right, go on.
And I think context is super important, because we don't want, like, we don't really want to go to YouTube, see the top results, and do that. A lot of times what we want is connection.
Right.
Right, we want to talk about that thing with another human.
Right.
Because somehow we're hardwired for that.
Right.
All throughout history, the way we would learn new things is by conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Now, I might be pushing that too much, but then I feel like that's the thing. So both of us, in our own way, we're not really in the content business. There is tons of content out there. We're in the community business. We're creating conversations with our with the people who choose to be a part of our community.
Very interesting. So this unique moment we are in history, and I'm inclined to buy that, because, you know, apart from when a unique moment in history will arise, I've always thought of what it will look like. How will I know when I'm in a unique moment? Bro, because I clearly missed the crypto bandwagon. That was a change in the world, right? It could have changed my world and so many people around me's world if I had bought bloody Bitcoin in 2008. Like, you know what I mean? So, there's moments in history where time changes entirely, that we look back and be like, oh, that was World War II. Oh, that was our greatest tragedy. We do not really know that in the moment. In the moment, things are just happening on an everyday level. And I've thought about the question, what it looks like when there'd be something like that. And as uninclined as I am towards this crypto utopia in the future, I think NFTs is worth a consideration. Because it's not like, with this unique internet world of crypto and NFTs and all this stuff, it's not just that a new asset has been introduced. It's that a new asset that is actually an infrastructure has been introduced. So there can be assets on top of this. This is a new rule of engagement. It's not just an entity I exchange. There's something underlying. There's meaning behind it. There's laws and rules that somehow the world follows because of its code. And so I think this might kick something unique into place. There was this interesting... Bolo.
One very interesting thing that you just touched upon is the idea that how do you know that you're in this?
Right.
Right. And I want to just talk to your chat for 2 minutes now. You said you took this example of crypto, which is, if you had gotten into crypto, then, you know, lives could have been changed. Let's forget crypto for a sec, right? Because in the end, I don't want to get too deep into technology. I, as a designer, I'm a believer that technology needs to be abstracted such that humans can use it, right? Not just programmers who can use it. So for example, I believe crypto, eventually you won't say it's crypto. In the same way that, for example, today, you don't say e-learning, do you? E-learning was a hot term back in the 2000s.
Right.
It's learning today.
Yes.
Right. You don't consider email a pop IMAP thing, which is the protocols behind it. You don't consider internet an HTTPS thing.
Right.
You're here watching Prakar's videos. It's a very human thing.
Huh.
So I think what I want to ask chat is, tell me, how did you feel when you first came across Prakar? Right? When you first came across Prakar's channel, I want to just see some reactions there. Because that feeling is actually very similar to the feeling when somebody first came across, let's say, Bitcoin or crypto or NFTs as an idea.
Are you saying I'm
Bitcoin?
Go on.
I'm saying, Prakar, you're a concept.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That has managed to, like a magnet, pull people in.
Hmm.
That's the parallel. Right? So the people who came across your stuff, like some of your early believers, let's say, they followed you on YouTube when you didn't have that many followers. You didn't have that social proof on your side. Yet they took a bet on you. So
you're blowing my mind.
So that, you know, has nothing to do with crypto. Yet it's that same thing playing out in so many different ways in the world today.
Bro, you just blew my mind, man. So let me get this straight. If I were to go to, say, my audience, be like, hey, because I thought about this idea. Like, I think this is way back when we probably were hanging out for the first time, man, right?
Mm.
Or like hanging out online, because we don't say that anymore either. I was like, because I have never questioned the fact that I was going to grow as a creator. I have had moments of doubt, but I was always kind of clear, I'd do it. If I spend long enough, I'll do it. I was like, I'm sure there's people who'd be willing to invest in that. Why can't people invest in influencers like that? So if somebody invests in me and they pay me, say, 5 rupees, and then 20 years later, it's 5,000.
Yeah.
Or I mean, that's probably bad math, but like shorter, 5 years later, it's 5,000. Maybe that's a good deal. So you're telling me I can do that because that's where I think you're going. Because so then I can just have bola.
So I feel all of us could have always done it. It's just that it was never as easy.
Huh.
Which is, the fact is, startups, for example, have been raising VC. They've been raising venture capital for a long time.
Right.
Right. And what that basically is a venture capitalist saying, based on these patterns, this kind of growth, this kind of team, these signals that I'm getting, I'm going to make an early bet in you. I am going to put a check worth 25,000 into Uber because I saw these kids and I was like, bro, a cab on your phone, like, that sounds crazy, but it's so obvious, the idea.
Right. I see what
but
you mean.
But you and I, as creators, we don't want to really raise VC money.
Right. Because that's a lot of money.
You're like, you don't understand the venture capital thing. You're just like, it's a bunch of old dudes.
Right.
Right? Who don't understand what we're doing in some ways.
Right.
So an alternative needs to exist for us. How do we let our early backers in some way, the early adopters, buy into our future success because they are investing in us early? So the upside of you growing huge as a creator, the bragworthy thing there is somebody can say, dude, I was number 100 on Prakar's. I was 100th subscriber. I have a screenshot of it as well.
Right.
But most people don't have that screenshot, right? That it's lost forever, that moment in time.
Right. So like, could it be like, say, for instance, I'm only imagining this right now. Say top 100 subscribers all get an NFT from me in the future. Hypothetically, I'm a new creator. And now that I'm going to grow, like I know I'm going to grow 5, 2, 3 years down the line, I'm going to have 1 million subscribers. And all those NFTs are going to worth 10 times of their original price. And they all make a profit. So is it going to be like, if we can facilitate almost a venture capitalish model using faith as an instrument from regular individual retail, you know, investors?
We can make something way better than that.
Hmm.
Because till now, there have always been middlemen in whatever you try to do, right? The fact is, think about, I don't know where I heard this recently, which is, think about somebody who's amazing on Twitter today, right? Killing it, absolutely killing it on Twitter. If they were born 100 years ago, 50 years ago, what would they be doing instead?
Huh.
Right? There was no way for them to get their ideas out to the mass public.
The medium did not exist.
Medium did not exist. So that power was centralized in, let's say, TV stations or radio stations. So before radio stations, it was maybe, you know, kings, rulers, or something else.
Right.
So literally, I was reading this something about how a lot of the top writers back in the day, like the OG classic authors, were frequent Twitter users. Like, I'm talking about 1950s. However, their version of Twitter was pamphlets.
Huh.
So people would distribute their pamphlets and people would retweet a pamphlet by stapling another thing which they added their thing to.
Huh.
So it's almost like the technologies of today have existed forever. It's just their manifestations are different.
Huh. That's super interesting, bro. So it's like I wrote a pamphlet and then I have a young boy run towards you with it. You read it and then you want to add something of your own. So you write your own, staple it, and then it goes to a third person.
Yeah. And eventually a publication is born. A publication is born, which becomes the middleman saying, we will help you figure this out.
That's wild, bro. That's wild. You know, I've almost suspected that very often about myself. When I think about what I really bring to the table, I often wonder if it's an understanding. If it's not, I'm 25. How many novel ideas will I have? I have a very unique attitude and that lends me some cred and so on and so forth and whatnot. And I'm smart and all that. But like how I don't expect a lot of originality from me. What will I do at 65 then? But there is something very unique that I offer, which is understanding. And it's very similar to saying Netflix has all these TV shows. What is worth is not another TV show, but somebody who tells me which one to watch because I'm paralyzed. It's almost like we are paying people to sort through the mess of abundance that the internet has created. Please make sense of this for me, right? Isn't that similar? Is it not like combing through all this unformed information that's in front of me? Somebody make sense of this for me.
Mm.
So it's like very unique like that.
Yeah. I would want to connect that to the concept of an artist, which is in the early days, you had like kings, for example, were patrons of art in some sense, right? They would support artists, with whatever this thing, they owned pieces, they were in charge of, you know, they had their private collections that were open to the public, things like that. I sort of feel like that, like an artist's role is to pull these ideas from the ether and bring them out to the world.
I think, you know how people almost always have this overlap between artists and entrepreneurs, where like they use creatives and entrepreneurs. I don't think they're very different. Like, forget the flashy Twitter version of entrepreneurs or like this whole idea that's sold to us. As a real entrepreneur, think of yourself, think of your friends, right? And artists, it's a creative enterprise at its core, right? You're creating something new, whatever it might be. It might be a new node or it might be a connection between two nodes. You're just creating. And so both, I think, do that. They create something out of ether.
True. And I don't like using the term artist because people have too many preconceived notions about it.
Likewise,
right? Same with entrepreneurs. I prefer the term creator because it's almost like with a creator, you can have any space that you're in, any space that you're pulling these ideas from or connecting, or the correct word, synthesizing ideas, synthesizing connections. And then you can bring it out in whatever medium you might choose. For you, it might be video. You know, for somebody else, it might be an app. For somebody else, it might be sculpture.
Right. It's interesting that for some people, it's memes.
For some people, it's memes.
Dude, it's no, because I don't understand. Like, memes are funny to me. I'm a regular human being, just like everybody else. Memes are funny to a lot of people. And if I tried long enough, I'll make decent memes. I'm not saying I'm top 2% of all meme makers ever, but I'll do decent, right? But here's the thing. I can still sort of explain where a joke comes from and what it does. I cannot explain how you make a meme. Like, what is happening? How are the elements juxtaposed? A joke is language, 3 sentences juxtaposed, right? Build an expectation, break it, simple, walk forward. With a meme, it's a background, and like a subject in the middle. There is text. That text can be ironical, yet we all bloody understand. It's a layer of context that we... Creatively, I don't get it, bro. I don't get how smart it is.
True, man. I was um, I was listening to this Clubhouse recently, which the Meta Koven Clubhouse.
Right.
Meta Koven, for people who don't know, he's the dude who bought the $69 million worth Beeple.
Huh.
Right. He's the third most expensive art ever in the world.
It's
right?
funny, we are already calling them by the artist names. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
So he on this Clubhouse was saying something around lines of how every city is a meme that could manifest itself at a large enough scale. Which is, when, let's say, you talk about New York as a city, you had early adopters in the city, people who came in, you know, crossed oceans to come there. And they had a shared ethos of what they wanted the city to be. And today, the city is a reflection of that core meme just, you know,
budding around itself.
Outwards.
Right.
Yeah. And now it's replicating, right? Today, New York doesn't just exist in the physical world, it exists in our heads too.
And we have some part of New York existing in our physical realities for that. At least, like, you know,
yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
And yeah, that is true. And it's not just me. Anybody who's watched like a New York-based sitcom show has... That's wild.
So it's almost like, what if you could invest in New York in the 1920s, right? In some way. Like, let's say it's owning land in New York. Let's say it's owning an apartment in New York.
Fuck.
Fraction of an apartment in New York.
Right.
Just the fucking washroom.
Right.
Right. Just the fucking sink in that washroom.
Right.
You had to be there to do it, right?
For sure.
That's the scene. But the point is, New York will never come again in time.
Huh, right.
But, like, history will never repeat, but it will rhyme.
Huh. Wow, that's good. Nice. Right. Huh. I like
so
it.
So now we actually have the technology to own fractional pieces of a meme and be an early adopter and actually propagate that for financial and cultural gain.
Huh. It's so interesting. So I create a tumor-sized economy on an idea the size of a mole. Because that's what will happen. I think about it with companies all the time. I don't mean this particularly for NFTs, right? You do your shit, whatever that business might be. I take a share from you. I sell it to somebody who then keeps it and then he mortgages it to get a debt instrument out of it. That is then sold in a futures market upon which options are sold. And then upon which there is all these layers of economic transactions happening upon a mole-sized commodity, if at all, a piece of paper. And I'm wondering if that is not inviting the same kind of thing on, say, Prakhar stocks or Abhinav stocks, right? So it's like, I'm an early adopter of Prakhar and there is a betting market behind it where you can sell it, say, after 5 years when Prakhar's at 5 million, buying the second subscriber right to Prakhar is worth a lot of money.
True.
That's possible.
And I think the radical idea that's sort of wrapped into all of this, right, that is almost invisible in plain sight. And, you know, to actually add to that idea thing, the mole size thing you're saying, all of this was possible because of one person or one group of people, Satoshi Nakamoto, pseudonymous.
I know.
Right? The fact that he was able to bring this technology, which we still don't realize the effect of it.
Bro, you think he's an alien?
Bro, either he's an alien or he's from the future.
Something of that nature, right?
Yes.
Because like, and you're the perfect person to talk about that too. Because everybody else is like, nah, he can't be alien, bro. What are you saying? He's a human. He's just hiding. He's a group of people. I'm like, no, like, think about it. The most obvious explanation is he is somebody who we do. If Elon Musk is our concept of epitome of thought, that guy's 15 years behind. Like, let's be real. That
For sure, bro. I mean, I look at Elon and Elon is just he's a reflection of his times, right? Elon is not saying anything which is, bro, fucking crazy. It's just like, it's inevitable. He's just planted the flag on the idea.
Yeah, he's just doing it. All the inevitable shit. Yeah. Because I think what's cool about Elon is everything we read in a comic book, he's like, I'll try and do it. Because we think, obviously, it's undoable. It's in a comic book. He says, I'll try and do it. And then he does it. And you're like, oh my God, you're so cool. You do what you say. Right? And so Elon, right, maybe he's like 5-10 years. Maybe on the science side of executing things, maybe he's even 15-20 years. But 15-20 years is nothing as compared to what crypto seems to be showing us. Bro, I have had these intense conversations with my family about crypto. And now they're beginning to see merit. And what I mean by my family is a symptom of a larger social class. Mm. People who are older, people who have nothing to do with it, who've made their fortunes working hard in life, right? Which is a very antithetical notion to putting your money in something online and making money out of it. So it's like the what I knew as this unique niche thing against my otherwise physical society in India is now everybody's talk of town. Like everybody wants to talk about crypto. So something's really up with that.
Mm. And, you know, a quick throwback to episode 57. The OG listeners here, you should know what episode 57 is.
Right.
Very likely that Satoshi Nakamoto is actually from space. From whatever space might be. Whether it's an outward manifestation or some kind of inward manifestation. A different dimension. If you think about it, if you had to trade, like just to put it out there, money is not something we invented. Hmm. Sort of, it's the concept of credit and debit has existed. It's sort of hard-coded in us.
Yes, absolutely.
So for us to exchange that value with an inter-dimensional, intergalactic species, we're not going to use the dollar.
Hmm.
Right? We're not going to use the dollar, and we're not going to use a middleman. We're not going to use a bank that says, I am the top bank on Earth, and I'm going to exchange the top bank on Mars. We want to do it in a way that cuts out the middleman, and it's a direct transfer.
Hmm.
And the blockchain is actually perfect for that. It's not there yet.
Hmm.
Like you still have to set up the links, but it could do that.
Hmm. Hmm. When you said it's not there yet, I was just like, it's not there in time. That's it. Right?
Mm.
So it's like, dude, you know, like we'll go down a conspiracy black hole right here. Because I just think this mystery is too good to be true. We don't know who Satoshi is. Please. Okay? Please. Like, don't tell me that.
Yeah.
But tell me about NFTs. Let's go back to that because there's a lot I want to pull out there. So, this NFT thing, is it like a stamp? Is it like, this is now mine, except for digital stuff?
I mean, one angle to look at is definitely ownership, right? Which is for you to own a piece of land. You could always, like you, let's say owning a piece of land in Faridabad, you could always have a fucking Khosla type situation. Somebody builds a wall around it and now you're stuck in battle,
right?
You're stuck in legal battles. So there always needs to be an external authority that can resolve those disputes.
Right.
With all ownership, that is typically the same. With blockchain and then blockchain, crypto, NFT, using these terms kind of interchangeably.
Huh.
Because the core idea there is that you can have ownership without a central authority. It's permissionless, it's decentralized.
Right.
So now once that happens, anything can be tokenized. Right. So for example, the pinned comment on this video, once this video is out, what is that worth?
Huh.
Right. Today, there's no market for that exchange. Maybe YouTube will do it as they have their ads product and they do all of that. But you, for example, if you could find a buyer who really, really values that and buys that top pinned comment, and then there's a second buyer that also wants it and they would pay a higher price. Now you have a market for this world that you create. You already have your Prakhar metaverse. It doesn't have to be in VR. You're
blowing my fucking mind, bro. Because I'm
glad.
So, here is what you're saying. If you throw in permission for exclusivity in a land of abundance, people will literally fight for meaningless pieces of shit. Like, the pinned comment, I'm just saying, like, it's like, it might be meaningless right now. We might find a lot of meaning in it going into the future as culture evolves and we're already spending 10 plus hours in front of a screen every day. What happens next? Are we part of the screen? Is the screen part of us? Like, you know, So what you're saying is that as soon as we were able to manufacture something that would keep the system stable, conflict to either we have this permissionless, all permission, like this decentralized ledger keeping thing, we can figure out what is up. As soon as we can do that, we can create scarcity. And as soon as we can create scarcity, we can create market for exchange. And as soon as we can create market for exchange, we can create economic transaction out of that. But is there anything bigger than economic transaction that we're looking at with this? Or is this just like an economic outgrowth?
So, you know, what actually excites me is beyond just the, like, of course, I love that there's now a stock market for everything, right?
Right.
people who've never been into stocks, they might be like, yo, that's kind of crazy. I don't want to learn all this. But the thing is, it's, you will at some point need to do this because, I mean, Naval's famous quote, right? He's like, if you want to get rich, you can't just work with, you can't just keep selling your time. You have to own an asset.
True.
Right? True. So looking at it as a stock market is probably the wrong way to look at it. It's like ownership. That's what it is. Right. So what was your question?
So where my question is, this? can you like, it's like, bro, just suppose hum ek jagah pe and there is infinite land in that jagah. Theek hai? Hum Faridabad ke us ilaqe mein hai jahan pe sabke paas khet hai. Aur khet hi khet hai, bro. Itna khet hai ki haal kharab hai. But us khet ka koi market nahi hai. Kyun? Kyunki tumne mere ko becha, main manu kaise? कोई और लेके बैठ गया तो कोई और आके बैठ गया तो उसमें सो इंस्टेड व्हाट वी आर एबल टू क्रिएट हमारे फिजिकल वर्ल्ड में टेंजिबल वर्ल्ड में वी हैव द जुडिशरी द पुलिस सिस्टम लीगैलिटी लॉ लैंड एक्ट एटसेट्रा 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 इन दिस डिजिटल वर्ल्ड वी आर लाइक वी कांट हैव एनी ऑफ दैट वी डोंट हैव द रिसोर्स टाइम फॉर पीपल टू पुट थ्रू डिजिटल सॉर्टिंग ऑफ हु ओन्स व्हाट वी क्रिएट दिस सिस्टम यूजिंग ब्लॉकचेन वेयर यू नो वी मैनेज टू सॉल्व द प्रॉब्लम ऑफ कॉन्फ्लिक्ट रेजोल्यूशन Because things are
and that is to put real terms to it. That's what a smart contract is for anybody who wants to go further. A smart contract is where you can actually define these terms of what should happen when this, and then the blockchain and basically the system then enforces. So it's a permissionless sort of thing.
Very cool.
And nobody can confiscate it from you,
bro. On a theoretical point, just like because I see so much faith with this idea, right? मतलब अभी हमारे पास क्या है? To put a stopper. What we have is the police and the judiciary system. Last line, military. We have people who will enforce through violence and coercion and you know, reformative activities like throwing you in prison to enforce a leakage. In this digital world, we are relying on blockchain like it's bloody God. Like this is unsinkable, infallible, unhackable, uncheatable. And I am very scared of invulnerable objects. Like this is, you know, it makes me kind of uncomfortable. As from a purely thinking standpoint, I don't know the details. But what do you think? Is this really possible or are we going to find out later? Because, you know, Twitter was great. Nobody thought Twitter at scale when 80% of Twitter is full and everybody is now speaking gibberish to each other. Twitter is not going to be great. There was a point in time where only clear skies appeared. But as we move towards scale, as we start filling up the room, it's very different from having the room half full or quarter full.
Yeah.
So you think this blockchain stuff is that trustable?
I would say, I mean, to the Twitter example, it's almost like the bigger that entity becomes, the more subgroups you have within it.
And right.
It's almost like what used to be Twitter is today, literally, what used to be Twitter is today Prakhar on Twitter.
Huh.
In the sense that Twitter at some point had 10,000 users and today you have 10,000 followers.
Right.
Right. So more of these sub-communities are formed.
Right.
So at a network level, I feel like that's what happens. The bigger a network gets, the more fragmentation that you see within it. But then when you move to the top, it's the matter of who owns these networks. So the YouTube example, for example, is you could sell that spot right now without crypto at all.
Right.
But in the end, YouTube, Susan, the CEO sitting there, her entire team, YouTube as an entity decides your fate. What if that entity didn't have a face? What if that entity was something that it's your own bank, for example, right? The concept of crypto as money is that instead of trusting a bank, you become your own bank. Right. Now, of course, that's not, it comes with a huge responsibility.
Sure.
You have to maintain your private keys. Nobody can reset your fucking password for you. But then now you have the option. Before it, you didn't have the option.
Right. Right. So, where does this go? Like, purely from an imaginary kind of a standpoint, where we're looking into the future, speculating. What does this look like, man? Why would somebody pay seven and at an Indian at that? What the hell? What kind of an Indian has 70 million? Uske paap mummy chappal nahi marte usko. Bro, I know so many parents who come to me and are like, mere bachche ne mera debit card leke Fortnite pe skins khareed li. Like, you know what I mean? This is where we come from. This is our default mindset. What sort of an Indian goes on to invest 70 million? And I looked at it. it's okay. Like, I'm going to be honest about it. It sounds a little insane.
100%. Agree.
So what
I would say,
huh?
I would say, let's look at the concept of it, right? Which is, I think we've hinted across, we've hinted at this a bunch of times, but in this today's conversation. But what's the value of an idea? What's the value of an idea? Right? At the at its core, that's the question it sort of comes down to, because it's hard to put a value on an idea. Which is today, Prakhar, for example, if anybody's making a summary of today's video that they're watching, and they make it as a Twitter thread or whatever, there's probably 40 to 400 ideas in today's session alone. What's the value of each of them? We have no clue. Now, let me give you a different example. Pi, right? Amazing coincidence also. Yesterday was Pi Day.
Yes.
3.14.
Yes.
The idea of Pi, how much has it changed the world?
Huh.
You cannot put a value on it.
No.
Literally every single thing out there, Pi as an idea has touched it.
That's right? Fucking wild.
And Pi exists today. It existed in the past. It exists. It will exist in the future. It's technically outside of time.
Bro, who this is how my
owns Pi.
This is what my parents feel like when I explain to them stuff about YouTube. Because they're just like, that blows my mind. That blows my mind, bro. So you were saying we can monetize ideas?
Yes.
Damn. What does that look like, bro? Is it like a website I log on to and see ideas that people have posted, and I'm like, okay, I want to purchase this self-development idea, and then I take it home?
100%, bro. Like, imagine if you were the owner of a fraction of Pi. Imagine you were the owner. So Pi technically has an unlimited number of digits,
right?
So owning a fractional piece of that, I don't know what that looks like, because it's unlimited.
Right. Right.
However, maybe it should be unlimited, right? There's an unlimited number of humans on this planet if you remove dimension of time.
Right.
So
stop.
Imagine owning Pi.
You're fucking with
owning
me.
Owning Pi or piece of Pi.
Huh.
And actually nobody can confiscate it for you. And 500 years in the future. Fuck it. 500,000 years in the future. Pi will exist. And imagine Prakhar's ownership of Pi also exists.
Bro. This is like a dimension change in the way we live. Now, from my very fresh understanding of NFT, this will change everything.
Yeah.
But for what? Like, so 500 years, 5,000 years down the line, Prakhar's ownership of Pi will get him what? Money? Still money. Right? So we're still...
Somebody say I'm giving off supervillain vibes. Love it. That's exactly what I'm going for. I feel like we have too many heroes and not enough supervillains. So that's great.
Bro, what's your supervillain inspiration? Who do you love?
Bro, to be honest, I feel like whenever I look at supervillains, I sort of feel like there's one fatal flaw that breaks their whole thing.
Which is what?
It's either ego or the power gets to their head or something. But Dr. Manhattan.
Who's that?
He's probably the perfect superhero. From Watchmen. The blue dude.
Never seen.
Okay. You love the concept. But Why? Anyways. Okay. So he lives outside of time. He is this blue. He's energy, basically.
Uh-huh. So he's spiritual.
He has hashtag vibes on his Instagram.
Right.
But anyways, I think what was the point before supervillain vibes? I was going to touch on something. what's the point of owning Pi, right?
Right.
What is it? Just the money? I would say at one level, you know, there's definitely one direct angle you can see it as this obvious one, which is in VR. You'll have your artwork on the wall. You have your skins and all that. That sounds like, okay, theek hai, matlab abhi bhi hai. We have some version of it already.
Sure.
But I feel like the bigger picture, and this might be the first time I'm ever like articulating and saying it, there's a good chance that we extend our lifespan beyond what it is right now.
Beyond by uploading our consciousness on blockchain?
By uploading our consciousness on the blockchain.
Bro, this godlike trust in a technology, that's scary.
Where would you rather upload your consciousness?
Nowhere. Let
me just put it that way.
I would rather download them in my genes, pass them on through my sperm and die like everybody else.
Yep.
Right? Uploading it on blockchain? Bro, like that's signing up to be... If I wanted to torture you after that, all I had to do was mess with your non-physical upload. Like I could just slowly corrupt your file and you're being tortured in your consciousness.
So it is fucking scary, bro. It is fucking scary because it's like you can, for example, extrapolate this to selling your soul to the devil. Right? Technically.
Yeah. It's quite like that. That is the contract.
But it is. But
so blockchain's the devil.
But who would you rather owns your consciousness? You or someone else?
No one. Yeah, I'd rather let it just die.
We are at this point where we want to be sovereign in every sense of the word. Right? So if you are going to live, let's say 200 years now, if you're going to live a 500,000 years, you know, the scene I remember from Futurama, huh, which is this dude, he gets into this cryo chamber by accident, the door shuts on him and he opens it up and now he's in the future.
Huh.
He goes to his bank and they're like, you have a balance of 4 cents or 40 cents or something. And then she's like, with today's interest, with all of these hundreds of years, it is now worth. And she quotes this outrageous number, billions of dollars. Imagine that. Imagine you could earn your interest on your money or whatever, your assets, let's say, for a lifetime. Today, that's not possible. Why? Because banks won't last forever.
Hmm. Hmm.
It's a very recent thing that this thing's, but blockchain gives us that, it gives us this light that we can move towards, which is, there is an option now. Like so far, all of this was an abstraction. Today, it is becoming closer to a manifested reality.
Right. Right.
A self-fulfilling one in that sense. Because now that you know it, now that it exists, somebody is going to build it.
That's wild. That's wild. How much do you buy into this idea that we'll have a very virtualized, digitized interaction with the world? Because, see, getting Prakhar's naked butt cheeks as an NFT is very valuable if you can then flaunt it on your wall. You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to go around and be like, oh, look at this photo on my phone. But if it's hanging on your wall, it could be Mona Lisa. It could have perfect lighting, you know?
A great example of this is, you know, people are like, bro, like, this example is, bro, Mark Zuckerberg bought WhatsApp for $19 billion. Bro, maine to App Store pe jaake download kar liya. Mujhe to free mein mil gaya.
Right.
Right? People say that.
Right.
Like that. But bro, it's exactly that example. A screenshot of something is different from actually owning something. Right, like today.
How? But though, it's just feeling, bro. Like
it is feeling.
I never got to that point.
You could go to the Louvre. You could go to the museum. That one Mona Lisa, for example, you could get a postcard of it for like fucking £10, 10 euros. Fucking overpriced, but 10 euros.
Huh.
But that is still going to be different from this one Mona Lisa that exists in the world. And, you know, if you actually pull it back in time, what the Mona Lisa represents is not actually that lady.
Hmm.
Sitting there in this thing. It's actually not even about what the painting looks like. What it represents is Leonardo, is Da Vinci's time. Da Vinci's time is lost forever, except for the Mona Lisa. Da Vinci might never be born again.
Dude, you are the best podcast guest I've ever had. This is by far the most mind-blowing conversation I've been a part of over the last year. Fuck yeah! Hey, you got like 10K smarter, man. This is dope. Nice. That's a great way of putting it, bro. That's incredible.
Proof of work.
Huh.
It's proof of work.
Right.
Da Vinci had a limited number of hours in his life. What's the value of 1 hour?
That's so wild. But here's the thing then. Okay, now that we're thinking along that line, I'm going to play the game. Okay. So Da Vinci had, say, Da Vinci had 10,000 hours in his life, hypothetically, 10K, right? And then here are 1,500 hours of his life in a Mona Lisa painting.
Yeah.
Okay. But those 15 hours look very different on input and then successively change to become very different on output. By what, even like when he creates that painting, the output that he's had, what it'll affect me with is going to be very different from what he put in to make it. Right? Like the emotion is going to change, the mood. I may probably misinterpret the whole damn thing.
True.
So there has to be a way, if that is what is truly being monetized, if it's Da Vinci's hours, then we have to find a way to pass them on more purely. Because there is communication contaminants that are getting into the tank.
That's true. That is definitely true. That's a great point, bro.
That's the next, bro, you want to start a startup and make like the next NFT?
Bro, I mean, here's the thing. I've started on the process of making my NFTs. A lot of people in the chat are in one way or the other into it. But, you know, I like what you said because it's almost, I mean, to connect this to the idea of a meme, right? What is a meme? I mean, in this context, is Da Vinci's time converted into proof of work, which is like this, let's say, painting. And now the painting can detach from its physical form. The idea of Mona Lisa can exist in your head.
Right.
So in some ways, memes don't care about their creators.
Oh, yeah. You know, memes
care about their own propagation.
Memes write genes.
So those contaminants, yeah. Like genes, exactly.
Yeah. Memes write genes, genes write memes. Like they have a very symbiotic relationship, right? Genes don't care about memes. It doesn't matter what your god is. You just want a god, right? If you were born in Jerusalem, you could have been Muslim, Christian, Jewish, or some variety of Muslim, Christian, Jewish, or maybe uniquely some other, and it wouldn't matter. You'd still live your life pretending like this is my meme. So you'll have like this pretense, but genes don't care about memes.
Maybe that contamination is actually not a bug. Maybe it's a feature.
I think it's a bug. You're touching on something very interesting. Because if you remove this bug/feature altogether, you create collective consciousness. Right? Then it's like a code being executed in all our heads at the same time.
That's true.
But if you introduce it to its extreme, then you create violent terror. So it's too much order, too much chaos.
This is
Jordan Peterson's entire thesis given out in 7 sentences by Abhinav Chikara and Prakhar Gupta, brought to you by PG Radio. But like it is really that case. Like those are the two extremes you sort of get into. So maybe partly it's a bug and partly it's a feature. The fact that it produces inherent variability, which leads to innovation, creation, and then therefore like this, what is that thing called? Like an equilibrium, like a stasis situation where your difference and my difference aligns. So this bridge hangs in a very weird way. But it also creates enough difference where the bridge collapses once in a while. So that's unique. That's unique. Because, I was talking to my friend. This is a very silly example. I have a friend whose sister just got married. And they have this great photographer, dude. They shot like insane shots, right? And then I was talking to her. I was like, listen, at your wedding, we'll get VR cameras. Because I want to feel how it was like to be there again.
Yeah.
When I put on the VR and I'm dancing on the dance floor and some Punjabi rapper who sings in Bollywood.
Bro, that's a great example.
Right? So it's like now, it's not just that I get Mona Lisa, which is like the output of the wedding happening or the output of Da Vinci performing. It's that I get...
collective moment.
Yeah, the fact that he's going through that tribulation in his head. He's going through all that like confusion in his mind. And he's sitting through it and he's doing it and he's going over and over. Maybe I want the experience. If that's what I'm truly selling.
I think that's... You've basically described via NFTs why wedding photographers are such a big deal. It's because that moment in time, you're trying to capture it in the best way possible. Because it's never going to come again.
Yeah.
You might have a different marriage, but that's never going to come again.
And most wedding photographers are substandard, but they get paid a lot of money.
Yeah. I mean, there's actually a gap in the market then.
Right.
There's a gap for a wedding photographer who fucking understands technology. Maybe he's not even a wedding photographer. Maybe it's a new job that gets created. It's not called wedding photographer. But somebody who can capture that moment of time, pieces of it, give it out to everybody who was involved at that event. And forgetting the economy, you're buying into this person's marriage, whatever, but just that idea. is crazy. And it already exists, right? Through photographs. You know, like, for example, a lot of people here, your parents' wedding is a big deal.
Right.
Right? Big deal. You wouldn't exist if that didn't happen.
Sure.
But.
Not so sure, but sure.
Not so sure. But you don't have a video of it. Imagine that. You don't have a video of it because we didn't have the technology back then.
Right.
And it's now lost to time. It's flown in that river of time.
I know. Bro, that is so wild. Like, sometimes I feel like when my kids are my age, they will go on the internet, they will look up their dad. You know, like, the one experience I would pay a lot of money for is chilling with my mom and my dad when they were 25. I want to see if we'd
100%.
Hang. Soch ke dekh, bro. Kitna chill hoga? My dad at 25, are we hanging? Like, are we bros yet? But, and I'm never going to get that. But my kids might. They might log on to PG Radio and they might listen in on a conversation I was having with 27, 28 year. How old are you?
27.
27-year-old Abhinav Chikara, right? And so might your kids. So they can experience us at 25 or 27. And that is a wild day.
That is insane, bro. And I think that what you describe is basically the idea of digital scarcity, right? Huh. Digital rarity.
Right.
People are like, bro, what is the, it's a fucking JPEG. It's a, But the point is, bro, all the content that you're putting out, it's Prakhar's proof of work.
Hmm.
It's Prakhar's time and energy manifested in the real world. Hmm. It's going to last forever. Hmm. How long do you think this channel is going to last?
Hmm.
Forever, bro. Mm-hmm. As long as YouTube runs,
this channel is going
to literally be online. This video. There's probably someone right now watching it 500 years later.
Huh.
Watching That's it right so, now.
Hey, if you're watching this 500 years later, leave a comment and show us some love. Make sure you comment, subscribe, and like. See,
100%. And bro, imagine. So, just to connect examples, I'm just synthesizing on the go here.
Huh.
What's the value of the first comment on this video? 500 years later.
Down the line. Huh.
Bro, you never know. Like, the world is so could be so different. Today, we're like, oh, maybe it's an ad, right? What exactly is it? 500 years later, bro, it was only one of it in time. There's only one first comment. Everything else was not first.
That is wild. So, bro, this idea entirely blows my mind. The fact that... because I think very often how much of what you and I become has to do with the fact that we never knew our parents at 25. Right? Like, we did not know the stupidities they were. If my kids, like when my kids see me on the screen, say 30 years down the line, son, daughter, if you're watching this and you see me say the word fuck or you say me, like, you know, make stupid jokes and laugh about silly stuff, what's that doing to you? I'm interested. How does that change the social fabric? That's so interesting too. But it's unique that just... Because bro, kya hai? NFT is basically saying this is exclusive and unique. It's funny how just exclusive and unique as a stamp can create so much cultural shift too. Because it's not like underlying asset exist nahi karta. Prakhar ka pehla video, pehla comment exist karta. As soon as it's exclusive, it changes the nature of it. How? वहां पे क्या हो रहा है? Like, why, what does exclusivity do to things? What do you think?
Maybe it's so at a biological level.
Go ahead.
Right?
Since we are on Prakhar's podcast. I give you permission.
At a biological level, we are programmed to respond to scarcity in a very specific kind of ways. And we've been doing this forever. Right?
Huh.
For the longest time, we haven't had abundance. We haven't had unlimited food. We haven't had, like, bro, I can fucking just have this coffee that was grown in Ethiopia. Right? That this is abundance.
Mm.
It's crazy that this exists. True. Today, it's normal, though.
But you're saying it's crazy Ethiopia exists?
How it's crazy that I'm drinking this coffee from Ethiopia. It's probably made you, bro. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Right? And that kind of abundance exists today. But for our longest time, humans have lived in scarcity. Whether it's where am I going to get my next meal from, whether it's hunter-gatherers you're talking about.
Mm.
So suddenly when we remove the bottleneck, was that it was the physical world.
Mm.
Now that we're in the digital world, there's a possibility of real abundance that you can reach. Now, of course, it is still connected to the digital world, right? You, the digital world as of yet cannot exist without
the real world.
Without the real world, yeah. But I feel like scarcity is a very, very human concept. It's deep in our DNA. I don't know how exactly. Maybe you can explain this better.
Is it an important tool?
Maybe it is. Because I feel like if you, for example, if you knew, actually, I don't want to mix immortality in this.
That's too conspiratorial. Wow. A new has been reached for Abhinav Chikara. Too much conspiracy. Because, I can't handle that.
I mean, it'll muddle the ideas.
Right. I know what you mean.
Okay. So if you had, for example, like today, for example, you have, what is anxiety? In some ways, anxiety is unlimited possibilities, but finite time.
Huh.
And that infinite possibilities is only getting bigger.
Huh.
Right? FOMO exists in a very, very real way.
Specific anxiety.
FOMO.
Right.
Now, FOMO, technically, I feel in some manifestation has been around forever.
Right.
The fear of missing out on that herd of, you know, I don't know why I keep going back to hunter-gatherer examples.
Because like, what you want to say is on a biological level, but you say it in
biological
your own way.
Level.
Yes, it is true. That's our base programming.
Yeah. The fear of missing out on that pack of animals that we could have hunted and now they go away means real biological
damage. Loss.
Damage.
Cost.
Loss. Right?
Right.
Somebody in your clan could die because there was not enough food.
Right.
Or lack of water. Like that scarcity. Not enough rain. Could cause real, real damage. So I feel like humans are programmed at some level to deal with scarcity at a very, very, you know.
Maybe it's not scarcity. Level. Maybe it's discernibility. Because, you know, it's like, how do we differentiate a ruby from a diamond in terms of value? And maybe the fact that everybody wants one of the two makes it more valuable than the other. Maybe that's how we discern things. I'm just thinking because it's like, you know, if you took a macro view, if you took an alien view, and not just an alien, if you took, say, a tribesman from Africa's view of all the German cars that are lined up, say, in and around my house. It's not Mercedes or BMW or Audi or any of those to him. It's all German cars at best. Right? So it's like, maybe it's just that there is an element of discernibility that we come to with scarcity. That we can now differentiate what this is versus what that is. Because you know what is also very interesting is we hadn't figured out that cars could sell on the principle of variability until Henry Ford, if I remember this correctly. Where he figured out we could just paint them different colors and people will pay more. Or something of that nature, right? This was figured out by the Americans, I think, sometime. But the point being that we think it's about the utility, but I think it's about utility plus identity. How do I differentiate what this is from everything else? And so maybe what scarcity allows you to... Of course, there is an element of like, you know, what is more biosocial than just biological. In the sense that the feeling that you get from owning Sachin Tendulkar's first bat when you show it to your friends is very real. Like, it stays with you for that night. You're like, very happy I have this, right? Or maybe the inspiration you get from having the first ball MS Dhoni caught gives you a sort of an inspiration. I'm just saying. But I don't know. I don't know what scarcity produces. It definitely produces a different response to things. It makes us less rational. Because what the hell? There is infinite versions of that available with infinite screenshots. Right? It makes us slightly irrational. It's not entirely weird that I'm laughing at Meta Coven or giggling at Meta Coven rather. Because I don't know who'll have the last laugh there. But I don't know. I don't know what scarcity does.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But you know what? One thing I just want to talk about is people who are watching this. I want to say that let's talk a bit of practical this thing around. Should I invest in or not?
Right.
Because in the end, people who are here, you're probably thinking about, should I buy NFTs? Because these two gentlemen on the screen were like, bro, fucking immortality, XYZ.
All that crazy stuff, yes.
Right? Mm. And here's the thing.
Don't.
You
Sorry,
can't.
Go on.
Yeah. Number one, don't. Right? The reason for that is as long as you're thinking, as long as your question is, are NFTs good or bad? It means you're not ready. Why? Because today nobody says, is the stock market good or bad? It depends on what stocks
you... Some uncles in some parts of Faridabad talk about this on their morning walk. Stock bazaar to satta hai ji. You've heard that. Don't tell me.
For sure. But you're, in the same way that your success or failure on the stock market doesn't depend on the stock market, but the stuff that you bought, whether it's the individual stocks, whether it's a mutual fund, which is group, it comes down to your decision making, right? What's winning out is you supporting ideas, whether that's a company, whether that's people's art.
Hmm.
It's you supporting ideas with your money.
Hmm.
You getting real skin in the game,
right?
So I sort of feel like people who want to invest, your step number one needs to be understanding it.
Hmm.
Only sure. After you understand, can you then go to a place where you want to put skin in the game.
Sure.
But still then, you're becoming a victim of FOMO, which is, there are definitely negative parts to this industry, which is anytime a new thing comes up, there will be people who are in it for exploiting, right? So for example, when in California, when you had the gold rush, people who got rich were the people, firstly, initially people mining, then the people selling axes and shovels, then fucking Levi's selling the workwear. But I'm sure there were a lot of scams. People promising a mine and there was nothing in it. Or bad goods or stuff like that. So I feel like you have to remember this, which is anytime there's a new, and I won't even say technology, right? Earlier in this episode, we sort of conflated how coming across Prakhar for the first time and crypto for the first time, it's a very similar feeling.
Right.
You feel like you're an early this thing.
Adopter.
You have to do your research. And you have to really have a strong reason to put in money. And that reason cannot be somebody else's doing it.
Right. So what you're saying are basically stuff that a stock market, you know, like this is common talk among stock market content creators on YouTube as well. I've heard some of my other friends repeat that. Like, listen, this is not, you have to be careful. You have to check the fundamentals. You have to believe in it. And only then you have to invest in it. This is not everybody makes a profit market. Like, there is no get rich quick scheme and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Hmm.
What and about you know, I will say it, this. I'll talk about that. Yeah. I will say this. There's in this point of time right now, the point of time in which I'm speaking, there's 210 people watching this, right? In the future, it's going to be thousands more, millions more, probably, you know, if we extend the timelines.
Sure.
If you're here watching this, you're already ahead of 99.9999999999% of the world.
Right.
You're already ahead. But that is usually not enough. It's not about being in the right place at the right time. It's also the right decision that needs to happen. And that decision is you planning to invest in something or picking up a piece of a creator's this thing. Or now you will have these options. Huh. Moving forward, I can tell you this, within the next 5 years, every top 10 YouTuber on YouTube, in every single category on YouTube, will have two things. One is a cohort-based course.
Huh.
Right? Let me just shill a little bit. For 10K designers,
huh.
Right? Because it is a movement in a similar way. But they will also have some kind of NFT where you have community ownership.
Huh.
So instead of because Prakhar, PG Radio is your IP.
Huh.
It's your intellectual property. In the same way, Pokemon is an intellectual property. And now people have cards that are now worth $50,000. You will at some point figure out the best way to let your community own a part of your upside and get rich or get, let's say, wealthy or whatever that might be.
That's along with you. So fucking wild. It has successfully blown my mind.
Awesome. Glad
it
to
has,
hear that.
Man. No, for sure. But tell me about making it now. Like, is it just digital art? Is it just edited videos? Is it just a GIF, a JPEG? What is it?
I'll give you one example of a token I invested in just yesterday.
It's a token.
Right? Yeah. Okay. A token, it basically, in the same way that Ethereum and this thing, a token is basically represents a certain
sure.
whatever asset.
Sure.
I'm putting this on record technically, right? This video is going to be there forever. So I don't know how it's going to turn out. Somebody watching this right now can probably look up the price, you know, in the future. But I invested in a token called Generalist. Right? The token's called Generalist. There's this company called The Generalist, which is a regular newsletter. They're a tech this thing. They do S1 filings like they do analysis of S1 filings. When a company wants to go public, these guys are just a newsletter, basically. Right? They have about 60,000 followers or something like that on Twitter. They have this upcoming project, which is the Coinbase S1 filing. For this project, they got an artist involved named Jack Butcher.
You probably know Jack Butcher. Visualize Value.
Visualize Value.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack Butcher is going to be creating 2 or 3 pieces of art for this big report that they're going to put out soon. And they're going to be giving this to their subscribers who are paid subscribers, some part of it is this thing. Jack Butcher is making the cover art and a few more this thing for it. Now, this entire project, how can you own a piece of this? So yesterday what they did is they did a private sale. They announced this on their Twitter.
Huh.
They said, we're raising 20 ETH, 20 Ethereum, which in today's price is probably $35,000, maybe.
Huh.
We're raising 20 ETH. Max per person that you can buy is 0.25 ETH, right? So there's going to be about 100 something contributors who can buy into this project. And now what's going to happen is when this goes out, we are going to be creating an NFT of the piece and two of the Jack Butcher artworks. The money that we make from that, about, I think, 50% of it goes to Jack because he's the artist. 10% goes to the generalist team. And the rest of it is distributed to the token holders of that piece. So now, when this goes out, I now am one of the 120 or something owners of this piece.
Congratulations.
Right? It's crazy. I was in the right place at the right time with the right decision. Because I was literally online at 2 a.m. or 1 a.m. saying, bro, ye kya chal raha hai? I saw this on Twitter. And he was like, it's opening in 30 minutes. I was like, okay, buddy, bought it. Within 30 minutes, they had closed. They had closed the sale. It was complete. I mean, all of this is on my Twitter, by the way. If anybody wants to go see timestamps. But now, this is an experiment into something that could very well be mainstream in a couple of years, which is every project that you have, how do you get these angel investors almost? And that angel investors are from your community. And I know this is going to be a financial success very likely.
Cannot wait to scam my audience, huh? Well, I'm Indian, bro. I know. Listen, the Western world puts up rules that you can play with and things will work. And then Indians, they take it, twist it to bloody shreds and then make money and run. Like if you notice, so, yes.
So let's talk about the meta aspects of this investment, right? For me, I saw all these signals. I was like, Jack Butcher's a brilliant guy. He has excellent proof of work. He's been doing that stuff, which now has these number of followers. Another signal for me was, I saw that Jack Butcher's last, he's only done 2 NFTs, by the way, so far.
Right.
The first of which sold for 33 ETH, which is 33 into $1,500.
Right. Right.
Second one sold for about 9 ETH. I know the third one is going to sell for in that range. And then now my signal is that, bro, these guys have proof of work. They have the work they've done. They have their reputation. They have their Twitter. They have this community. Like somebody who's an investor in fucking... somebody who was ex-Andreessen Horowitz, for example, one of the biggest investment firms, is one of those 120 who bought a piece of that. So I'm seeing all these signals, but I still have to pull the trigger.
Damn, right?
So that's how you would have to treat investments in NFT.
Nice, man. Nice. So, I mean, do you think we're possibly at a place where the stock market is losing its position right at the top of the get-rich hierarchy in a very unique way where sort of investments are being opened up in an institutional-less fashion where you don't need no bloody regulation and you don't need no court-settling authority, no arbitration. We have blockchain, the god technology. You think that's happening?
I think the stock market will always exist in a similar way. It's just that now we have the options. Now we have the option to, with our money, vote for ideas that we think should exist in the future.
Right.
Essentially, that's what we're doing. It's a vote of confidence, vote of money, vote of being an early adopter.
Right.
And, you know, in some ways, I mean, there are definitely unsavory parts to this. There's a lot of crypto scams. But whenever new movements like this happen, early adopters, there is a lot of wealth creation and wealth distribution that happens.
Right.
With these new assets, we have a way to redistribute wealth.
Hmm.
Right. We have a way to redistribute wealth because if your community sort of buys into you, let's say, Prakhar token. Let's say we have a token called Prakhar something. they can now, they have that vote of confidence that they're putting in. They're putting real money.
Shit.
And now Prakhar is an alternative asset class.
Right. Bro. Okay. Like this, I'm going to wake up a different man. I'm going to have to think about all of this so much. I'm so glad, by the way. Like, here's what I think. I think the hardest thing I'll have to face as I age is to stay relevant. Because it's easier to get lost in the tide as you age. There is stuff you need to take care of. There is your immediate reality. You wake up to realize that the wind sailed. And I'm so glad that I got this picture, because this is seeing that for myself at least extremely clearly. And if I don't make decisions after this, or whatever decisions I may come to, I'm going to think about it. Then it's on me. So my mind is equal to blown, bro. That's where I'm at with this conversation. Where are you at with this conversation?
Bro, where I'm at is, you know, I wanna talk to everybody who's on the live stream right now, and I wanna just say this. Don't fall for the FOMO, but there is definitely something happening. I feel like FOMO is one of those, it's almost like the same way that we can smell stuff. FOMO is something we can feel very viscerally. Right? It's one of the
ugliest seven emotions.
Senses, eight senses, right? It's a feeling.
Right.
I would say that you definitely have the chance to get involved early, everybody who's here, even if it's not today. Technically, even if you invest 5 years later, you might still be early.
Right.
You're still early, 5 years later. So let me take away some of that FOMO if you're feeling it. Right? It's not the end of the world yet. I mean, it's not over yet.
It's also not the beginning. Like, I mean, I'd go...
Hardly started.
Right.
Hardly started. So Gary Vee has this... I mean, he's a huge proponent, but there's one quote that he did in one of his recent interviews that blew my mind. He was like, remember when your parents were afraid to put their credit card information online?
Uh-huh.
And then you laughed at them. You were like, bro, kuch nahi hota, Flipkart paisa thodi leke bhagenge.
Right.
So, what are you saying? That's so ridiculous. And today, there are people who are setting up their MetaMask for the first time. MetaMask, by the way, is the wallet that you use for all of these transactions. It's like this Chrome extension. It's a wallet which holds your Ether. People are setting up their MetaMask for the first time and they're scared. They're like, what is this new thing, right? Is it safe? Will my coins go away? This Ethereum that I've just bought from WazirX, which is an Indian exchange, by the way, if anybody wants to buy it, buy Bitcoin, crypto, whatever. And Gary Vee is like, bro, you're the boomer now. You're looking at this new technology. You're scared of it. But bro, don't you see? This is the exact same thing. You are the boomer. And I was like, fuck, I am the boomer.
Powerful.
Right? So when I first got into this, I was the boomer. But the point is, the only thing we can do about that is educate ourselves. Today, our parents not just enter their credit card number on their desktop, but on their phone.
Mm.
Right? Imagine, remember how scared people were entering on the phone? They were like, e-commerce karna hai toh desktop pe karo, achha hota hai, matlab kuch hota hai usme.
Right.
Right. So now we're seeing the younger generations, they're actually perfect for this because they haven't seen the old world.
Right.
So they're going to be digital natives, crypto natives. So the best thing we can do right now, rather than feeling FOMO, rather than feeling, you know, that I've lost on this, the train has already left the station, all you can do is educate yourself.
I don't even think it's really there yet where the train's left the station with the NFTs at all.
It's hardly reached the station.
Yeah, it's hardly even, I'm also like extremely skeptical because stuff that gets people excited is stuff you should be wary of. Right? Like a lot of people are excited worldwide. And that's trigger for me. That's like, okay, I'm going to sit and think about this for a little bit before I decide.
And in the end, you know, only you, person watching this, only you can pull the trigger. Nobody else can pull that trigger for you. And nobody should pull that trigger for you.
Sure.
You have to make your decision. And whenever you feel like you're ready, go into it only then.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Is there any more points that you wanted to touch upon?
No, bro. I think I'm good. I feel like I might have done too many points, actually.
Yeah. Dude, it's been fun, but, man. I've had a great time. It's
been really fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm so glad that episode 98 was with Nir.
Huh.
Nir is one of... He's, to me, he's an OG that I look up to.
Right.
He is doing a lot of stuff in this field. So I'm glad I'm 99. But then I'm also, I love that from the previous conversation on NFTs you've had with them, you've had time to think about it. So yeah. Today we could go a little bit deeper.
For sure.
So really looking forward to episode 111.
Yeah, you should be on 111. Now you put pressure on me to think who's going to be 100. Because up until now, I didn't even know this was 99 until you were like, oh, I'm 99, this is so special. And I was like, wait a second, this is a big deal? Yeah. I'm going to have episode 100.
Who was episode 69?
No clue. Bro, I just am not the guy who cared like numbers. Last person. How does it matter?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So
I would love to be 111.
Yeah, 111 is you.
I'd also love to be 420.
420 is you too.
A little bit in the future.
Yeah, 111 is for sure you. 100%.
Planting a flag there.
Bro, you got it. You got it. All right. This has been extremely fun chat. We'll see you super soon. Theek hai, I'm going to end the stream now.
See you somewhere on the internet. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.